Justice Jacobs, Justice Holland, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, and Justice Ridgely. My name is Seth Rydenberg. I am from the law firm of Tybout, Redfern, and Pell. I represent the appellee, Flack Woods Group, S.A. On behalf of Flack Woods Group, S.A., I would like to introduce Mr. Mark Thornhill, who has been admitted pro hoc vici to this court and will be doing the argument on behalf of the appellee, and his associate, Kirsten Holseder, who is on the brief as well. Welcome to the court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Thad Bracegirdle of Wilfs, Lukoff, and Bracegirdle, appearing on behalf of the appellant and plaintiff, Stuart Matthew. First, may I please reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes.
Thank you. Your Honors, this appeal brings before the court one specific issue, and that is this. Should Flack Woods Group, S.A., a foreign entity domiciled in Switzerland, be held subject to personal jurisdiction in Delaware to defend claims that it actively aided and abetted breaches of fiduciary duty committed by its co-defendants in their capacity as managers of a Delaware limited liability company that included the wrongful dissolution and winding up of that limited liability company? And more specifically, this issue requires application of the so-called conspiracy theory of jurisdiction that was first developed and set forth by this court in its Instituto Bancario versus Hunter Engineering opinion in 1982. When this action was filed, plaintiffs served Flack Woods with process pursuant to Section 3104 of Title 10 of the Delaware Code, that of course being the state's general long arm statute, as well as under the Hague Convention, given that it was a foreign entity. In response, Flack Woods moved to dismiss the claims alleged against it, not on the merits of those claims, but solely pursuant to Chancery Court Rule 12b-2, on the grounds that the Court of Chancery lacked personal jurisdiction over it. As well established under Delaware law, Flack Woods' motion presented the Court of Chancery with a two-pronged inquiry. First, was service of process on Flack Woods authorized by statute? And second, would subjecting Flack Woods to jurisdiction in Delaware violate due process under the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution? With respect to the first prong, Flack Woods does not question on appeal that service of process on it was proper under Section 3104. In its holding below, the Court of Chancery did not explicitly address application of Section 3104, but nonetheless found that it appears that acts necessary to meet the statutory basis test under the conspiracy theory of jurisdiction would also be required to meet the due process test. In any event, the record here supports the finding upon this court's de novo review that service of process was proper under Section 3104(c)(1), which authorizes personal jurisdiction over a non-resident defendant who in person or through an agent transacts any business in the state. And for the purposes of this action, the dissolution and winding up of EOSphere LLC, which is a Delaware limited liability company, as effectuated through the filing of a certificate of cancellation with the Secretary of State, and which was an act which is central to facilitating the defendant's unlawful conspiracy, constitutes the transaction of business in Delaware through an agent, which is sufficient under the long-arm statute.
Are there any factual findings of the Court of Chancery that you contend are clearly erroneous?
Not the factual findings insofar as what the court found specifically were part of the record. We do contend that certain of the court's interpretations and inferences that were drawn or not drawn from those facts were an error.
An error or are clearly erroneous?
Well, clearly erroneous, and I'll suggest why, Your Honor. For example, one of the key issues presented by this appeal is whether Flack Woods, under the Instituto Bancario test, knew or had reason to know of its co-conspirators' acts in Delaware, or that had an effect in Delaware, that were in furtherance of the defendant's conspiracy. What the Court of Chancery did was, looking at the record, it focused in on a series of communications that took place Shortly, either around or shortly after the time of this filing of the certificate of cancellation, and those facts are not in dispute. That is, the communications that took place, the substance of those communications, and what they indicate in terms of Flagwood's actual knowledge. Now, what the Court of Chancery found, which we contend was clearly erroneous, is that from those communications, the Court of Chancery concluded that Flagwoods did not have actual knowledge of the filing of the certificate of cancellation in Delaware or some other indicia of an effect in Delaware.
Until after
the filing of the certificate of cancellation.
All right. And I have two questions as to that. Implicit or a premise of that holding is that the Instituto Bancario test requires that the defendant over whom jurisdiction is contested has to know that the act that constitutes has a significant impact in Delaware will in fact occur in Delaware. Do you agree with that part of the holding?
I do agree with that part of the holding.
Okay,
yes.
That is a requirement.
Correct. Yes.
All right. So your argument then is that the application of that requirement to the facts as pled in the complaint and is proved on the record was wrong because the court got the conspiracy wrong. That is, the conspiracy didn't end at the moment that the LLC was dissolved, because that wasn't the purpose of the conspiracy or the object of it. Rather, it continued and continues today because the object was basically to usurp the opportunity, that is, the ongoing business and of the LLC. Is that a fair statement?
That's exactly correct, Your Honor.
All right. The response to that argument is, well, that's nice, but you didn't plead it. That is, nothing in your complaint shows that you pled that theory of conspiracy, and therefore you can't argue it here. How do you, what is your reply to that?
My reply to that is that the facts that support that description of the conspiracy is, in fact, pled within our complaint. What was alleged in the complaint is that, number one, there was a conspiracy between these defendants to remove my client from this business opportunity. That was effectuated through a dissolution winding up of the Delaware Limited Liability Company. Now, that act, and specifically the filing of the certificate of cancellation with the Secretary of State, is the action in Delaware that provides the basis for asserting personal jurisdiction over Flagwoods. Now, that, however, is not the end of the conspiracy, as Your Honor correctly described our theory. What we alleged in the complaint is that the conspiracy was to take advantage of the opportunity that was presented originally by an agreement, collaboration agreement between Flagwoods Group SA and EOSphere, and to, once Mr. Matthew was removed from the business, to then carry on with that same business opportunity and to profit from that opportunity and pursue the same technology that EOSphere had originally been contracted to undertake. And those are fairly pled in the allegations, Your Honor. The conspiracy that's...
Okay, I was looking in your reply brief for some detail of that and didn't address it.
Okay, well...
That is, what you seem to argue is, the evidence that we put into the record in connection with the 12B2 motion supplied whatever facts are necessary, but that wasn't so clear either. So that's one argument. That is, what is the scope of the conspiracy? you have an alternative argument, and that is that even if the court's conclusion about the scope of the conspiracy was correct, this defendant knew or should have known, had reason to know, as of the day of the dissolution, that there would be an effect in Delaware.
That's correct. Yes, that's the alternative argument. That because certainly we know that as of May 24th of 2010, that's when there's no doubt and no dispute that Fleck Woods knew of the acts in Delaware. That's because on that date, they admitted that they had received a copy of the certificate of cancellation issued by the Secretary of State. So, Your Honor is correct. In the first instance, even on that date, that is sufficient to prove the fourth element under Instituto Bancario, because the scope of the conspiracy was such that the conspiracy was ongoing on that date. Now, alternatively, even if one accepts the Court of Chancery's conclusion that the conspiracy ended on May 12th of 2010, on the date when the certificate of cancellation was filed, the facts as shown in the record, and also the allegations of the complaint and the reasonable inferences to be drawn therefrom, do show that Fleck Woods, at a minimum, had reason to know of the effect in Delaware from the conspiracy, and specifically the effect in Delaware that would have been occasioned by the dissolution and winding up of EOSphere. And the facts that are in the record that demonstrate that are, if the court looks at the facts that are in the record concerning the email communications that took place in May of 2010 between Mr. Matthew and Mr. Yule, who is the authorized representative of Fleck Woods, Mr. Yule makes some statements in those communications which reflect that he had been having ongoing communications with the co-defendants in or around that time, which is when the dissolution and winding up was taking place. Specifically, there is an email that was exchanged on May 10th of 2010. Now, that is 2 days before the certificate of cancellation was filed. And this email is found at page A854 of the appendix. And in that email, Mr. Yule, on behalf of Fleck Woods, admits that, you know, he had heard the news the week prior regarding the dissolution of EOSphere, and that at that time, he and Fleck Woods were currently seeking advice regarding the impact of the company's closure on Fleck Woods. Now, it's fair and reasonable to infer from those statements that at that point in time, which is before the certificate of cancellation was filed, Fleck Woods, by virtue of their seeking advice, were not only complicit with their co-defendants in planning the dissolution and the filing of the certificate of cancellation, but were seeking and consulting with perhaps counsel, perhaps internally, perhaps with the co-defendants, to determine what the impact was of the dissolution.
Well, that's pretty speculative, isn't it?
Your Honor,
all the record shows is that they were seeking advice. You know, there's nothing that connects that, I mean, that is a literal matter, connects Delaware to that advice. You know, the argument seems to be that, well, you know, it should have been obvious to a company as sophisticated as Fleck Woods that Delaware was going to be at the core of all of this, and therefore they're chargeable with that knowledge. That's you know, educated guesswork, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest that the argument is not so much that it should be obvious to an organization like Fleck Woods, but simply that given the facts in the record that show the type of organization that Fleck Woods is, that it is reasonable to infer from the facts. That is, Fleck Woods is an organization that has, Fleck Woods Group SA, in fact, manages a family of companies that have operations in 20 countries worldwide, employs 3,500 persons, has operations in the United States as well as Europe and Asia, that it is reasonable to infer from the sophistication and the scope of Fleck Woods operations that either at the time of the dissolution or even prior to that, when they were doing business with EOSphere, that a company with those types of operations would have done due diligence on a business partner that it was working with, and in fact would have taken care to determine the legality of the actions that its co-conspirators were taking with respect to EOSphere LLC, the company that it had been doing business with for the better part of 2 years. And so, Your Honor, it's not so much, I think that it would be obvious to Flack Woods, but simply that under the facts of this case, that if one looks at the type of organization that Flack Woods is, not only that, but the statements that Mr. Yule made concerning what was happening at that time, concerning the seeking of advice, that it is reasonable to infer from those facts that either Flack Woods was gaining knowledge at that time concerning the Delaware impact, or should have known. And that is the test. And it's not simply actual knowledge under the fourth factor of the Instituto Bancario, but it's actual knowledge, or rather that the party should have known. And that, again, it's a different question than whether it's obvious. It's whether, given the situation and the sophistication of the specific defendant, should they be charged with that knowledge? That's the argument.
They should have known. The argument wasn't raised below, was it?
Well, it was, Your Honor, and I'll explain why it was. In the briefs before the court, and the way that it was argued before the Court of Chancery oral argument, we argued the fourth factor based on the facts which we believe and still believe showed actual knowledge on the part of Flack Woods. And the fourth factor of Instituto Bancario is not phrased in, it's phrased in the disjunctive. That is, it's a test that has two parts, but it either requires actual knowledge or, at a minimum, that the defendant should have known about the contact with Delaware. That is, it is a lesser state of knowledge that is implicitly subsumed within the actual knowledge requirement. And so what we are...
No finding by the Court of Chancery one way or the other on should have known.
Not in the original opinion. In the subsequent opinion, when after the motion was filed, following the court's first decision, which granted Flack Woods' motion to dismiss, my client filed a motion for final judgment under Rule 54, or in the alternative, we moved for certification of interlocutory appeal. And in that motion, we raised as a potential grounds for certification of interlocutory appeal the fact that the court had not considered the reason to know requirement under Instituto Bancario. Now, in deciding that motion, the Vice Chancellor issued an opinion where he granted the final judgment, thereby allowing us to take this appeal, did not have reason to opine on or decide the certification of interlocutory appeal, but nonetheless took
the... You're saying that because the issue was decided, even though it was in a subsequent motion, it's been preserved.
It has been preserved, yes. And I think
as far as our standard of review, we can call them the Vice Chancellor's findings, but not a motion to dismiss like a motion for summary judgment. It's a paper record. And what the Vice Chancellor held is, as a matter of law, the complaint should be dismissed. So on appeal, we're looking at the same paper record, and we make an independent determination of whether the facts alleged in your complaint support jurisdiction or not.
That's correct. Yes. Yes. And significantly, Your Honor, it's also not only the allegations of the complaint, but also for the purposes of a Rule 12b2 motion, whether the facts that have been presented in the record, even outside the pleadings, are sufficient to support personal jurisdiction as well.
And what you're saying is a fair reading of your complaint is that, putting aside when this conspiracy stopped, the dissolution was an integral part of it, and anyone who was interested in the dissolution would have logically been asking, when's it going to happen, where is it going to happen, and they would have known it was Delaware.
Correct. Yes, that's correct. But getting back to Justice Ridgeley's question, in addition to being preserved on the subsequent decision from the Vice Chancellor, we had also argued on the motion to dismiss that the facts as we presented them met the fourth factor of Istituto Bancario, whether it was actual knowledge, whether it was had reason to know. We believed and still believe it was actual knowledge, but nonetheless, what the Court of Chancery failed to do in deciding the motion was consider whether those facts, if the court believed that they did not prove actual knowledge, the court failed to consider alternatively whether Flagwoods had reason to know of the Delaware impact from the certificate of cancellation being filed.
So we have no finding one way or the other on that.
Well, in the original decision, that's correct. It was not considered by the court until the subsequent opinion, when the Vice Chancellor stated in his opinion that he did not believe that it had been presented earlier, but nonetheless, he set forth his reasoning on that point as well, and why he believed that did not apply. So, and unless the court has any further questions, I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Your Honors, Mr. Matthew, the appellant, did not present facts sufficient to infer a conspiracy to misappropriate the assets of AOSphere. Mr. Matthew's position is that such facts, he presents an alternative position, such facts, he says, were presented either within the pleading itself, or if they weren't within the pleading, such facts sufficient to infer such a conspiracy exist in the record.
Let me just ask you a question. Didn't the Court of Chancery reach an opposite conclusion? The Court of Chancery say there was a conspiracy?
The Court of Chancery found that there was a conspiracy to cut Mr. Matthew out of AOSphere. But what the appellant now argues is a broader conspiracy. He says that what was presented to the court below was a conspiracy to misappropriate the assets of AOSphere, something that would have happened, and appellant contends, is broader than the idea of a conspiracy to cut Mr. Matthew out of the organization. The court said that Mr. Matthew had not pleaded sufficient facts to support that conspiracy, and we assert that is absolutely correct. And I'm prepared to explain that point. But in this court, Mr. Matthew goes further, and he says the record facts, notwithstanding whatever limitations there are on his pleading, he says the record facts would infer, provide sufficient basis to infer a conspiracy to misappropriate. And I want to explain to this court why that is wrong for at least three reasons based upon the record facts. And so perhaps it would be best if I go directly to that point.
This is where you're arguing that we need to slice and dice the source of the record that we rely on a 12b2 motion or under Instituto Bancario. Some of the factors we have to look only to the complaint, and others we can look to the entire record.
Well, actually, I'm just going to the second part of that. There are, as I read Vice Chancellor Noble's opinion, and as I study the sense behind Instituto Bancario's five factors, I can see, and it's logical to me, that those first two factors relate to the cause of action, and the cause of action has to be contained within the pleadings, and that is something the court reviews as a matter of law, and the court does not go outside the pleadings to determine whether a cause of action exists. The last three factors of the Instituto Bancario case really pertain to the constitutional due process piece. And so I believe the way that Vice Chancellor Noble was understanding the case and the way that he wrote the case was that the existence of the conspiracy and therefore its object was something that had to be determined from the confines of the pleading. And that for the other factors, which are about constitutional due process, you could go beyond the pleading. Now, the position of the appellant is that you can go beyond the pleading for all five of those factors. And you can look at the record facts for all five of those factors. And I'm prepared to address that argument, that even if you can look to the record to determine whether there are sufficient facts in the record to plead this conspiracy to misappropriate assets, indeed here, the record facts do not support that. And indeed, what I want to present to this court is that there are a series of unrebutted facts which the appellant does not display to you. And those unrebutted facts, which even under the prima facie standard, this court is required to consider, demonstrate that there could not have been the conspiracy to misappropriate assets of AOSphere that the appellant pursues here in this court. So if I may, the first of those, let me just set this tiny bit of background, then we'll go into those three sets of facts. The essential argument that the appellant presents here is, I better step back a bit further because we haven't discussed this. As you know from the briefs, critical things to the argument of the appellant is the existence of this thing known as the collaboration agreement. An agreement between Flackwoods Group SA, my client, and AOSphere that was a framework to try to develop business in the future. It is that which the plaintiff alleges was misappropriated. Another factor that the appellant speaks about here is Flackwoods Limited. Flackwoods Group SA is a Swiss company. It is not, as described by appellant a moment ago, it does not have 3,500 employees. It does not have businesses in the United States. It is a Swiss entity that sells in three countries in Europe various types of ventilation equipment. And it also provides management services by contract to other companies within the larger Flackwoods Group. There is an affiliate. The affiliate is called Flackwoods Limited. It is a UK company based in Colchester, England. It is a separately incorporated company. It does different things, albeit within the ventilation industry. It has its own personnel. And you're going to hear, and you have seen in the briefs, that what the plaintiff is attempting to do is to conflate Flackwoods Group and Flackwoods Group SA, the Swiss company, which is the defendant in this case, with Flackwoods Limited. So that is the background that I need to give you. Now, the essential argument that appellant tries to present to this court is this. It is because Flackwoods Group SA, because Flackwoods Limited, the UK company, the sister company, if you will, started a scenting business with Loudermill, Mr. Loudermill, sometime after AOSphere was canceled, he says, this court should infer that Flackwoods Group SA conspired with Loudermill to misappropriate the assets of AOSphere. So he tries to conflate the activities of Flackwoods Limited and Flackwoods Group SA.
Flackwoods Limited was a wholly owned subsidiary.
All these companies are co-subsidiaries owned by a common parent.
Namely SA, correct?
I'm sorry.
Namely Flackwoods SA?
No, sir. No, Your Honor. The Flackwoods parent is a French company that is not named Flackwoods. There are various entities in various countries around the world that use the name Flackwoods plus something else, Flackwoods Limited, Flackwoods Group SA, Flackwoods India. And those companies have their own businesses, albeit, as I said, all within the ventilation and...
Okay, so Flackwoods Group SA is a wholly owned subsidiary of the French parent?
Yes, and so is Flackwoods Limited.
Okay, and so Flackwoods Limited is a sister corporation, not a subsidiary.
Exactly correct.
Okay, now, for which of those two sister entities did Mr. Yule work?
Mr. Yule was his paycheck, and he was employed by Flackwoods Limited, the UK company. But his work was not physically at Flatwoods Limited. He's an Englishman. His work, as he described in his deposition, was to be the director of what was called Air Climate Sales Europe. And so he helped other Flatwoods companies that had sales activities in Europe design applications and conduct their sales. His paycheck came from Limited. He traveled basically all the time. He is a UK citizen. But his work was not strictly for Flatwoods Limited. It was work for various of the companies. Flatwoods Group SA is the company that was the party to the contract that causes this lawsuit to occur. Okay, so if I may, as I mentioned, one of the arguments that plaintiff appellant presents is that the work that Flatwoods Limited did after AOSphere was dissolved with Loudermill should be imputed to the defendant here, Flatwoods Group SA. But that cannot be so because there are no record facts whatsoever to support an alter ego theory. In fact, the record facts are that Flatwoods Limited, the UK business, not a defendant here, that company was not in business with Mr. Loudermill at the time of the conspiracy. The facts are that Flatwoods Limited and Flatwoods Group SA each have their own businesses, and they each are incorporated in separate countries. In order for plaintiff to impute the post-dissolution sales between Flatwoods Group Limited, Flatwoods Limited, and AOSphere, or Mr. Loudermill, plaintiff would have to merge Flatwoods Limited and Flatwoods Group SA. He would have to impute the conduct of Flatwoods Limited to Flatwoods Group SA. That requires application of the alter ego theory. There are, however, no facts in the record that in any way support the notion that Flatwoods Group SA operates to serve a fraudulent purpose, one of the criterion to show the existence of the alter ego theory. Similarly, there are no facts in the record whatsoever to show that Flatwoods Limited has no separate identity from Flatwoods Group SA. As I mentioned, it's just the opposite.
Is it your position that Mr. Matthew simply sued the wrong defendant? That is, if he had sued Limited instead of SA, then would there be a different jurisdictional outcome here?
No, there wouldn't. This is a theory in search of facts that don't exist. If he had sued Flatwoods Limited, there would still be no conspiracy because there would be no conduct demonstrated by Flatwoods Group SA or Flatwoods Limited. I believe there was no conspiracy. But I will say this to you here. The argument of the theory of a conspiracy to misappropriate assets is dependent upon the post-dissolution conduct when Flatwoods Limited engaged in business with Loudermill. Flatwoods Limited is a separate entity, a separate corporation, has its own business. You cannot impute whatever Flatwoods Limited sells to Flatwoods Group SA unless you can show the alter ego theory, and there are no allegations of it, it's not pleaded, and there are no facts of it. Now, that is one of the three series of facts that makes the plaintiff's argument about this conspiracy to misappropriate assets untenable. I'd like to go to the second. The second, again, focuses on the activity of Flatwoods Limited, and Mr. Matthew contends that Flatwoods Limited, not the defendant, is now pursuing or violating the terms of this collaboration agreement. So the collaboration agreement was this thing, this document that AOSphere contends had some value because of potential future business that could derive from it. And it is the argument presented by Mr. Matthew that that collaboration agreement now is pursued, that it was misappropriated, and it now is pursued and is pursued by Flackwoods Limited. So at the threshold, this argument makes no sense, the plaintiff's argument makes no sense unless you are imputing the conduct of Flackwoods Limited to Flackwoods Group SA. But continuing on, first, the facts are, and these are unrebutted facts from the record, the facts are that this collaboration agreement anticipated essentially a three-legged stool. AOSphere was creating Sense. There was a company called Battelle Institute from Columbus, Ohio, a technology institute. It was supposed to develop some technology that would atomize the scent. And then with the Battelle technology, this was going to be incorporated into Flackwoods ventilation equipment and sold by Flackwoods. And that's the three-legged stool that was anticipated by this collaboration agreement that they allege was misappropriated. But the stool collapsed because the Battelle technology never was made. The technology didn't work. It failed. So since what was intended by the collaboration agreement doesn't exist, what is it that Flackwoods Limited sells these days with Loudermill? Well, the record shows that what Flackwoods Limited does is that it purchases an off-the-shelf product, a product made by a company called Prolotech, which is a different technology than whatever it was that Battelle was trying to create. And then it buys, the Flackwood Limited buys this off-the-shelf product, sells it to Loudermill's new company, and then Flackwoods Limited also assists in installing that Prolotech device. So it isn't pursuing the collaboration agreement that is allegedly misappropriated. Further, it's not violating the collaboration agreement. This is a principal argument made by the plaintiffs. But the collaboration agreement provides, in fact, as follows. And this is in the record at page 786. It addresses the exact point that I just described. It says, in the event the Battelle, sorry, it's a little bit hard to read here. In the event that the Battelle technology is not executed between, I'm sorry, but in the event the Battelle license is not executed between Flackwoods Group and Battelle, AOSphere will continue to remain the exclusive designer and supplier of Scented Media for all Flackwoods Group equipment and systems for a period of years. Well, Flackwoods Limited isn't selling Flackwoods Group equipment. It's selling the Prolotech equipment. And there isn't this violation of the collaboration agreement that the plaintiff so earnestly asserts has occurred.
It sounds like you're slipping in a little defense on the merits here, as distinguished from talking about what is being charged in the complaint.
Well, let me address that, Your Honor. To me, it's important for this reason. As I said, these are unrebutted facts. And there's another set that's even more important that I'm going to get to in a moment. But these are unrebutted facts. The plaintiff went out and did discovery. During the course of that discovery, there are things that come up which he does not rebut and which are negative to his theory. They undermine the theory that he proposes. This court's responsibility, as I said, under even the prima facie test, is to consider in its analysis facts that are unrebutted if those facts make the inference the plaintiff seeks illogical.
All right, so you're arguing, number one, to the extent that we can only look to the complaint doesn't adequately plead a post-dissolution conspiracy.
That's for sure.
But alternatively, even if it does, the facts that were developed in discovery negative that because they're unrebutted. Is that your point?
That's exactly it, Your Honor. And then, if I may, let me continue to the third of these points, which I think is also very important. The third point, again, unrebutted and from the discovery, is that Mr. Yule, who you know was the Blackwoods Group SA representative, Mr. Yule was not aware of the new business of Loudermill, it's called Dream Air, until after AOSphere was canceled. So Mr. Yule testified in his deposition that it was some weeks or months after AOSphere ceased to exist that Mr. Loudermill came to him and told him that he, Loudermill, had created a new business. Now, this series of facts is most important because it breaks the chain of causation on which plaintiff's whole theory of this conspiracy to misappropriate is dependent. The plaintiff's theory is that sometime between January and April of 2010, Yule and Loudermill conspired, and their conspiracy was to misappropriate these assets of AOSphere, and further, to use those assets of AOSphere in Loudermill's new company. That is the plaintiff's theory. But that theory is impossible. It is impossible given the unrebutted fact that Yule, Blackwoods Group SA, didn't even know about Loudermill's new company until after AOSphere had been dissolved. Accordingly, when Yule learns of Loudermill's new company, AOSphere doesn't exist. If AOSphere doesn't exist, it would be impossible to conspire to misappropriate its assets. It didn't have any assets. It didn't exist. So, Your Honor, those unrebutted facts, I believe, if the court decides to look at the record to determine the scope of the conspiracy, I believe those series of unrebutted facts demonstrate that there are not sufficient facts pled in the record to allow the inference of the conspiracy, presented in the record, to allow the inference of a conspiracy to misappropriate as plaintiff proposes.
One of the key legal premises that underlies the Vice Chancellor's jurisdictional opinion is that under Instituto Bancario, to hold Blackwoods S.A. in the case jurisdictionally, it would have to be shown that it knew or had reason to know there would be a significant impact in Delaware of its activities. I'm underscoring the words in Delaware.
Right.
What's the source of that rule? Was there any Delaware case before this one that glossed Instituto Bancario in that way?
I think that's fundamental to the fourth factor of Instituto Bancario. There has to be activity within the forum state, and in this case, that activity would be the dissolution. But also, the defendant has to have a reason to know of that activity.
Well, that's the issue. I mean, that puts the rabbit in the hat. Unless there is some prior case that said that. I'm just asking, is there some prior authority that the Vice Chancellor relied on to arrive at that decision, or is this the first case?
Your Honor.
Did it spring forth from the head of Zeus?
Yeah. Your Honor, I won't be able to cite you as I stand here a particular case that has looked at the situation as exactly as you describe it, but it seems to me to be so clear because the whole concept of this conspiracy theory of jurisdiction is that you are a non-resident becomes responsible based upon the acts of its agent. And so the agent has to take action while the conspiracy is in place for there to be any possibility of a purposeful availment.
The argument is that you have to understand all of the nuances of the conspiracy or at least the elements of the conspiracy, in order for that theory to work jurisdictionally?
Well, part of defining a conspiracy is to define its object. I mean, whenever we talk about a conspiracy, we necessarily speak to the object. And the court looked at what the appellant had presented, and it's well stated in the court's opinion. He determined that the object of the conspiracy was to cut Matthew out of the organization. And if that is the object, since...
let's imagine a scenario in which Black Woods and Laudermill say, all right, you know, we're going to agree to a dissolution of Aerosphere so that we can cut Mr. Matthew out. And we're going to then, arrogate to ourselves through some entity that we create afterwards, it's whatever ongoing business ahead. Now, that may require, a dissolution, says Black SA, but I don't know, I don't want to know, and don't tell me where it's going to be.
But, Your Honor, there was never any, the critical discussions upon which the court relied in determining that there were sufficient facts pled of a conspiracy are emails that are in the record between Ewell and the AOSphere people. Those emails do not in any way allow the assumption that the purpose of a conspiracy was to dissolve. Indeed, that is not what the Chancery Court found. They do not allow the proposition that the purpose of the conspiracy was to dissolve and then take the business for their own.
I'm stating a hypothetical here.
Okay.
And I'm saying if it is established, let's assume hypothetically, that Flacht, Woods, S.A. and Laudermill had an agreement to oust Mr. Matthew, dissolve the company, take over its business through a new entity, why should it matter? For jurisdictional purposes, assuming that Flacht SA buys into all that, whether Flacht SA knew that there would be the filing of a certificate of dissolution in Delaware?
Well, it has to know, because otherwise there wouldn't be constitutional due process. I mean, this is the whole idea of having some activity within the forum state that can be attributed to the foreign actor.
Well, why wouldn't knowledge of one conspirator be imputed to the other?
Because the five-element Bancario test says there are five elements, each of which has to be proven by its own specific facts. And one of those tests is, one of those elements is activity occurring in Delaware, item three, item four, known or should have been known to the actor. Otherwise, you're imposing upon an actor the responsibility for conduct in Delaware of which that person has no knowledge. There has to be a constitutional connection to Delaware. And the only way that you can achieve that is through something that that actor knew or should have known. And that is the analysis that the Instituto Court, this court, went through some years ago, when it crafted that five-part test. It looked at tests of the conspiracy theory of jurisdiction from other jurisdictions and actually jettisoned tests that had a much lesser standard, tests that did not require the actual knowledge or the inferred knowledge that ultimately was decided in this course, by this court. And so, when Instituto was decided, this court reviewed conspiracy theory cases from various jurisdictions and came to its own conclusion of the five-part test. And it concluded that it was necessary for this to be a strict test so that people not just facilely get jurisdiction over non-residents. And one of those five elements, each of which has to be proven by specific facts, was that the foreign person knew or should have known of the action in Delaware.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Focusing on the scope of the conspiracy for a moment, and this gets to one of the questions that Justice Jacobs asked me earlier, In the second amended complaint, paragraph 67, and this can be found at page A286 of the appendix, this is what we've alleged in count 7, which is our civil conspiracy claim. As described herein, all of the defendants unlawfully acted and continue to act in concert to misappropriate EOSphere's assets and deprive plaintiff of his ownership stake therein. Among other things, since Mr. Laudamille and Mr. Capua wrongfully dissolved EOSphere, they, with Action One and or other entities they control, have collaborated with Flack Woods to continue researching, developing, and commercially exploiting air fragrancing technologies, products, services, and systems in which EOSphere and plaintiff, by virtue of his ownership stake in the company, had valuable rights under the collaboration agreement. So that in a nutshell, is our allegation concerning the conspiracy, and I think fairly pleads a conspiracy that goes beyond simply the act of filing the dissolution papers in Delaware. Now,
what's your response to the argument about the distinction between the limited and the SA?
Well, it's what Flack Woods is attempting to do is to take advantage of the fact that there are separate operational entities within this vast organization. And quite frankly, they can't have it both ways. And what's important to note is that one of the facts that my friends point to is Mr. Yule's testimony that he actually learned of Mr. Laudamille and Mr. Capua's new business with which Flack Woods Limited admittedly has been doing business. Now, as we know and as the defendants admit, Mr. Yule is an agent of Flack Woods Group S.A. And so for jurisdictional purposes and for the purposes of construing the scope of the conspiracy, it's admitted that Mr. Yule, in his capacity as an agent of Flack Woods Group S.A., had communications with the co-defendants beyond the time after the dissolution took place concerning this new business opportunity and the new business entity.
And didn't we just hear that Mr. Yule was paid on the payroll of Limited?
He is, but for the purposes of this collaboration agreement, and this is described in our briefs and is in the record, what he testified to is that even though that's where his salary was paid because he was a UK resident, his job responsibilities were taken in furtherance of Flack Woods Group S.A. And in all the dealings with EOSphere concerning the Scent project, he was given authority by executives of Flack Woods Group S.A. To enter into this agreement on behalf of that entity. That was the entity that was the party to the contract. And at all times, he was acting as an agent of that entity. And that's not in dispute.
What about the supposedly undisputed evidence that Yule was not aware of Dream Air until after Aerosphere was dissolved?
Right, well, that was my point earlier, Your Honor, is that that actually, I think, supports the fact that the conspiracy was ongoing beyond the dissolution. Because the fact that he and Mr. Laudamille were having continuing discussions and that Mr. Laudamille had reason to tell Mr. Yule about Dream Air, his new entity, through which they're going to do the scenting business, that actually proves that the conspiracy did continue. And regardless of whether he learned of it the day after the dissolution, 2 weeks after the dissolution, that shows that the conspiracy was ongoing and that they intended to move forward with this project with Mr. Laudamille, Mr. Capua, through whatever vehicle they created. It just happened to be Dream Air. And that's what that proves, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel will take the case under advisement. Recess.